If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks. Thanks.
Hit it. Trick, trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick, trick.
You people, you're all astronauts on some kind of star.
Trick, trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Really on top of schedule today, Adam. We are recording this like days before it comes out.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I mean, Paramount probably made a lot of people's days by dropping two episodes at once, but Wendy's day, not made. Wendy's week ruined.
Paramount doesn't think of Wendy. They don't care.
They should. They fucking better.
I know. So here we are, first thing in the morning, giving the maximum amount of time to turn this edit. And it's going to sound great. I doubt any FOD will tell the difference.
Yeah. It's going to sound a little unusual. I don't know if it's coming across in the timbre of my voice.
Is it timbre or timbre?
But I'm a little bit under the weather. Post our voyage to the other side of the pond for the London Podcast Festival.
Oh yeah, you think something about being on a plane that long and being in a different country among thousands of people? I think that was a factor.
Maybe, I don't know.
I'm feeling great. Is this going to fall on me eventually?
Well, we took different airplanes home. And I also had first night back where my baby was waking up every hour because to him, it was not supposed to be nighttime.
I'm just going to ask, like, this baby thing doesn't seem to be going great.
It's going great. I love this little guy. He just, you know.
For future Jerome listening, you're really harming daddy's wellness right now.
Yeah. If you could go back in the past and somehow persuade baby Drone,
the boy,
to not have jet lag. That would be great.
Yeah. Drone Back to the Future's you makes out with your wife.
Oh, why is everything so Oedipal with you all the time?
Oh, God.
Well, you sound great, Ben. You don't sound sick. You look like shit, but you sound fine.
Yeah. Many people have said that.
Mm-hmm. I think this will be the first record to hit the airwaves since we got back from London Podcast Festival. You want to say a few things about that?
It was so fun. You know, we had more nerves for that show than we've had for some other live shows just because it felt like a really big deal to be in another entire part of the world.
Can I admit something to you? I had zero nerves whatsoever. Zero nerves.
Well, that's because you were like delirious because you did the totally insane 36-hour turnaround. Where did you have any jet lag at all, by the way? Did you like...
Yeah.
Okay.
I did. I went to bed every night at like 3 or 4 in the morning. Like, it was like that. But
okay.
I was fine. I was fine the entire trip until I'm on the plane home. And there's 5 hours left of that fucking 12-hour flight. And I'm like, you know, 24 hours of air travel in a four-day span, that's just too much. And I love being on planes. I love being in airports. I love the system of travel. I really started to feel it toward the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough. It took a lot out of me.
But it was worth it for that show. It was one of my favorite shows I think we've ever done.
Yeah.
To the extent that I remember any of it, which I barely do.
I didn't remember that we got a standing ovation, but our friend Jeremy Burge, formerly of Emojipedia, sent a video from the crowd. And when we finished that show, people stood up. And it wasn't like to get out of there as quickly as possible. They weren't trying to beat the traffic.
The reason I didn't see it at the time was because I'd been keeping my stage water in a mug next to my seat.
Uh-huh.
And when I got up, when the show was over and turned around, I kicked that mug clear across the stage, spraying water everywhere. I was horrified. So that was all I could see at the end of the show was the mess I'd made.
This is the first I'm hearing of that.
Yeah. It happened. And then I apologized to John outside the stage door. I was like, I made a great big mess out there. I know you're turning the stage for the next show.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. He made it seem okay.
Yeah.
We'll see if we're invited back next year.
We sure will. Thanks to everybody in the UK and further afield who came to that show. That was a little slice of heaven.
Yeah, they really made it feel great.
We even had some domestic friends of DeSoto that flew over to England and saw that show, which is crazy to me.
It's crazy every time we meet an FOD who is gone any longer than the bare minimum. Like, just leaving the house for a Greatest Gen show feels like an ordeal, and yet so many do.
Yeah, yeah.
Really grateful for him.
It was a huge amount of fun. Well, Adam, you know what else is a huge amount of fun is the Star Trek program, Lower Decks. Do you want to get into the episode today?
Nothing more fun than recording pod early in the morning.
Yeah.
It's Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 3, in the cradle of Vexilon.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown. Unknown.
Black alert.
Unknown.
Black alert.
Adam, unlike me, this episode does not have a cold. Open, that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonder how you make a decision like that.
Yeah, it seems like a big decision that spans, you know, all of space and time, as it were. Like,
it is the format of TV to have that.
Yeah. But, like, I've been watching, rewatching Seinfeld lately, and I've gotten to the seasons where they stop having Jerry doing a bit of stand-up at the beginning of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at some point in Seinfeld, they were like, okay, no longer will he be doing some material, and then you'll see all of the events that led him to the, you know, diamond-hard observations of that material in the episode. Like, that was the format for, like, the first four or five seasons of that show, but then they abandoned it, and then it's just, like, George and Jerry standing in front of a deli, you know, watching people drive by and, you know, talking about Superman or whatever.
Yeah, this also coincides with how tack-sharp and amazingly HD the episodes become later on.
Yeah.
It's always really impressed me.
So, yeah, they did not do a coldie on this one. Instead, we get the title sequence, and then we get a captain's log explaining that we are at the ancient ring world of Coruscantia, which was built by a different ancienter species than currently resides there.
Yeah.
And it's run by Vexilon, a non-monomaniacal robot intelligence.
Vexilon seems cool.
Yeah.
And unlike so many other situations in Star Trek where there is some sort of like religious component or malevolent force involved, everyone here seems pretty cool with each other.
No kids are getting sacrificed to Vexilon.
I mean, no kids at all. Makes it seem really great.
Yeah. Do you think that that's just because nobody's doing it on Coruscantia because everybody is so badly in need of tweezing out those eyebrows that nobody's really in the mood?
Yeah, those brows are heavy duty.
I got a shave and a haircut ahead of our Atlanta show recently, and my barber was like, hey, you want me to clean up those brows? And I was like, I don't think I've ever had my brows attended to in any way.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
My wife loves plucking my brows.
Whoa, really?
She's like, yeah, she likes getting in there. Like, it's something she likes to do. I don't ask for it.
Wow.
And I'll be damned if I'm going to turn her down. I don't know what I'm doing in there.
Oh, yeah. To deprive your wife of a pleasure of that kind would be very deleterious to your relationship.
Would be to deprive my wife of any pleasure I'm able to give her.
Hey, at least she can find the eyebrow hairs. Am I right?
This computer system, Vexilon, it's like the computer version of where you're old and you forget where you put your keys and you've got like the inconvenient forgetfulness of old age. Like,
right.
These are weird, like weather anomaly things and like events to the geography that are inconvenient, but not horrible.
Right.
But enough where you worry about Grandpa Vexilon a little bit. Were you to leave him alone for a while?
This is sort of what the Monty Markham character was dreaming about in that episode of DS9. Like, what if the weather wasn't perfect?
Yeah.
Then what would these fuckers do?
I think about the opinions of Monty Markham characters quite a bit.
So what these people need is some computer assistance from Starfleet and... you know, presumably a large supply of tweezers.
So you want to use tongs?
It's just Freeman and Ransom walking through the grounds of this facility with them. And it was really sad that Big Teeth Ransom continuity has not been preserved.
I know. I felt the same way. I really punched in and enhanced on his face and mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just normal Ransom.
He has teeth bones and he must speak.
Yeah. What he speaks about during his walking tour of Coruscantia is an art installation there. Is he a dumb that is acting smart around smart people, or does he truly have art crit bona fides?
I mean, the way he slams some of their finest art and then also slams some of their worst art is...
Yeah.
I kind of got like American Psycho vibes off of it. Like he describes these sculptures the way you might describe a Huey Lewis album.
Yeah.
The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
I hadn't thought that until you mentioned it, but yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, the joke is that both their best and worst statues are the same. Is that the criticism that the show is making of art in general? Lower Decks is anti-art, isn't it?
No, I think when in doubt, Ransom is the butt of the joke. So okay. I'm going to go ahead and say Ransom has sophisticated terminology for reviewing art, but his taste sucks.
It's a real glimpse of a possible future, because when Vexilon controls for the needs of the population, guess what? The population's freed up to... make good art and recreate.
Or bad art, you know, like whichever they want.
Chill the most.
Yeah.
It's nice. It seems possible. With the Vexilon safety net.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice. But, you know, we get another object lesson in just how messed up Vexilon is when they arrive at the actual control center with the giant screen. And Vexilon offers them iced tea and makes hot tea.
Ouch.
Yeah. You order iced tea pretty much every time the two of us have lunch together.
Yeah, I like it. You get this in countries that aren't the United States of America, like the hot beverage served in a clear glass.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem to be a thing around here, but we were just in Europe and I got a hot chai in like a clear water glass looking thing.
Whoa. Was there
it's
a handle?
An unexpected shot. No.
Wow.
Very unexpected.
How did they give you like a pot holder to pick it up with?
No, no. This was Dishoom. This is one of the great places in London. They gave me a chai hot in a clear glass that was also hot.
Dishoom was really good.
Yeah.
Daron did not care for the tandoori chicken. Too spicy for him.
Damn. Well, hopefully he gets there eventually.
I fucked up, man. I tasted that chicken and I was like, this chicken is good. And it's got a little bit of pepperiness to it, but it is not crazy spicy. So let's cut some up and give it to the baby. And then, like, I had done that, and then I realized that it was one of those slow heats that, like, shows up in your mouth, like, many moments after you've swallowed the chicken.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm, like, out walking around on the sidewalk with a very upset baby who's never had really spicy Indian food before.
You know what? I bet when you were a baby, your parents fed you like crazy food all the time. That's how you developed this great palate you've got. Darone's got to learn.
I need to teach him. I need to teach him.
Yeah.
What did
you are teaching him.
You too have a great palate. What did your parents do?
Not that. We were a pizza on Friday night household and just regular home-cooked dinner every other night. Like, I feel like chicken tonight, like chicken tonight. You know? Can't beat my mom's stroganoff, though.
It's more like nature for you. It's nurture for me.
Yeah, maybe it is. Ben, this Vexilon reminded me a lot of you because it is both conscious and self-conscious in two big helpings.
It's just embarrassing. I've been fine for millennia, but now I can't even control my monsoon seasons.
It feels terrible about this hot tea situation and about everything else it's been doing.
Yeah, all of the weather mess-ups just eating away at Vexilon and Freeman, full of hubris, cites her credentials as having minored in ancient technology or something like that, rolls up her sleeves Mariner-like and gets to work on Vexilon.
Sheer fucking hubris.
You hate to see this. Like, you have an entire crew of professionals who are good at this kind of work, but Freeman does it herself, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And she starts doing an analysis of what could be causing the problem. And we smash cut over to Lieutenant Boimler, who is leading his first away mission over on a different part of Coruscantia. And what they're doing is upgrading the first contact era power relay that the Federation installed on this planet. Not a planet. It's a ring world. It's like the thing in Halo.
Yeah, I mean, the Halo vibes are absolutely here. Were you a big Halo person?
I played the first one on my friend's Xbox. I've never owned an Xbox, so I've never played all through all of the games. I was very Halo curious, and I always wished, because it was like originally supposed to be like for the Macintosh. Like there was totally a Macworld Expo where they showed off some new like Power Mac G3 and the amazing graphical capabilities it was going to have by showing like in-game footage of Halo. And then before the game was able to be released, Microsoft bought the company that made it and made it an Xbox exclusive. And I was mad.
I remember just a lot of hours in college spent playing multiplayer, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like that gun that shoots the, like, pink crystals that then, like, pop inside your birdie.
Yeah.
Crystals!
Yeah, none of that here.
The greatest trick is yet to come.
What is your understanding of the working relationship between T-Lin and Boimler here?
So T-Lin is provisionally a lieutenant and is there to do sciencey shit if any sciencey shit pops up, but also does not seem to be like leading the mission. It seems like Boimler has been given command of the mission.
Yeah. But in a strange way, T-Lin is there to observe and comment.
Why don't you put her in charge?
You better just start dealing with it, Hudson.
And eventually, like, give advice down the road.
Right.
But she's very hands-off.
Yeah, initially she is. She's not impressed that Boimler is nervous about being boss Boimler.
Yeah.
Have you completed your confidence-boosting ritual?
Oh, that's not what I was doing.
The moment in life where you step from being an underling to supervising people is intense. Like, I remember when I was early in my career as a filmmaker, I would occasionally land a job directing a music video, and I would go from having, like, the previous week being, like, the lowest PA on the totem pole on, like, a AOL commercial or something, and then I'm directing a music video, and like none of my videos were very big, but I would go from being a total peon to like having 30 people working for me.
Yeah.
And it does make your ears pop. Like, knowing how to marshal a bunch of people toward a goal is like not something that comes naturally to everyone, and Boimler is self-conscious about not being a bad boss and wants to be good at this. And like T-Lin citing the statistics about ensigns being at a much higher likelihood of death or dismemberment when they're being led by a green boss does not help him.
Death?
Yes. and or dismemberment.
No, which really puts his team of three ensigns in the crosshairs here. We got Taylor the Catman, Big Murph, the Blue Man, the Blue Man,
Tin Man,
and Meredith the Human.
If I was to cosplay, I think Big Murph might be a cosplay that I would like to do.
So much of this mission is about the need for physical strength to do it.
Big Murph is right there.
I know. When you've got a Big Murph on your team, you got to get him in there. And that's to say nothing about the Cat Man,
yeah,
who also seems very strong.
And if a big portion of the mission was about falling off of a high place but landing on your feet every time, the yeah. Cat Man could come right in and do that. Yeah. Boimler doesn't need to demonstrate.
Yeah. The dangers are apparent in this scene because to not disconnect these power cells and move them in a careful way would mean a massive explosion that would destroy the building and everyone in it. So yeah. There are the stakes.
Bad design for a power relay, if you ask me. Sounds yeah. dangerous as fart.
Back on the Cerritos, the remaining three of the bunk bed crew check out the anomaly storage room. This is a place, you know, in some work environments, your badge doesn't let you into all the places. Now, since their promotion, they're allowed into a place like this. And it's full of all of the bar trivia items that you love on a Lower Decks episode, including the Betazoid gift box. And boy, oh boy, does he have a very foul mouth.
Eat a bag of boring motherfucker.
I didn't know that Dr. Ta'ana came in here.
He's a foul mouth and a very long tongue.
Yeah.
I kept thinking that this Betazoid gift box probably performs staggeringly good cunnilingus.
I mean, we've both heard of chowing box, but this box chows you.
Rejoice!
In anomaly storage room, box chow you.
What a country. The other notable anomalies in there are a inner light device and the Wadi game that, you know, everybody says Chula when you do well at.
Oh, hell yeah. The one with like the pastel triangles and the little girl doing hopscotch.
Doesn't seem like any Klonpigs were included in the box when they loaded this Wadi game on board the ship, though.
Did you ever know the name of this game?
They call it the Wadi Chula game.
Uh-huh.
We've always called it Al Moraine.
Right.
I'm sure that Lower Decks has access to more, like, accurate canonical information than we do.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just out there. It's not even in a case. It's just, like, on top of a pile of other boxes.
Yeah, what hoarders are maintaining this room, by the way? Like,
bad storage room.
There's no shelving or labels or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You must have hated this.
I mean, we're not in here very long before they get called away on their task for the day. That is the inspection of thousands of isolinear chips by hand, individually, in the isolinear chip junction room.
Yeah. Lieutenant Dirk gives them this totally insane job where some of these isolinear chips are going to be very hot.
Which is why it needs to be done by hand.
The room occasionally fills with poisonous gas, so they have to have respirators in there with them. And it's just like a totally monotonous, you know, scrubbing the bathroom with toothbrushes kind of job. And hazing is what Mariner immediately identifies this as.
This is feeling pretty ensign-y.
Yeah, especially because I don't know. I got this vibe from Lieutenant Dirk from Jump because he had that Kurtwood Smith forehead, you know? Whenever you see a Kurtwood Smith forehead in a television show or a movie, I think you got to suspect something afoul is afoot.
Yeah, which is sad, right? Like, because Kurtwood Smith's probably a nice guy in real life, but
not all foreheads, right?
Well, I think he's just so effectively made us associate that forehead with a certain kind of irascible hostility over the course of his illustrious career as a Hollywood that guy, that everybody else that has that forehead kind of tarred with the Kurtwood Smith brush.
I mean, that's a pretty tall and wide brush. Also, Billups's ferret is loose, so put a pin in that.
Yeah, and we've seen the ferret a couple of times. We saw it, you know, hiding in a box with a batleth in the storage room. It's around.
So report to him if it bites you.
Lancelot's in here?
So meanwhile, down on the ring world, Freeman arrives at the realization that the reason Vexilon is glitching is that its software hasn't been updated in 6 million years.
Are you a update the software the moment you get the notification type of person?
I didn't used to be, but I read a very persuasive article a couple of years ago about how almost always that is a software update that includes fixes for pretty important security things. And I kind of became an update immediately believer.
Except, like, for me, the experience of using video editing software, like, you'd never want to update, especially Adobe products, I would say. You'd never want to update the software on that for fear of them breaking projects that you have open already or whatever. Like, no thanks. Like, my experience as a video editor made me want to wait.
Yeah, I think that it's different for me with, like, the operating system and, you know, like, my phone's operating system especially.
Yeah.
I want to get that updated. I don't want any 0 days. Just how many 0 days do you think Vexilon has? Over 6 million years? It's going to be like hundreds of thousands of 0 days in there.
But Freeman recognizes that Vexilon requires this update and is a person who waits no longer than 6 million years in order to run it.
Hang tight. I'll get you caught up with this update and it should clear things right up.
After hitting the button, the clouds outside turn solid and start falling from the sky.
Yeah.
Seems like a bad sign.
Sky is literally falling. We see a bunch of different scenes of people trying to engage in their artwork and poetry on this ring world. You know, suddenly finding their world getting even more dangerous than it already was. And Boimler, meanwhile, is like trying to delegate this very dangerous job of deinstalling all of these power relay things, and then sort of like claws back the delegation when T-Lin reminds him of how risky this is. And so he's like trying to demonstrate now, like, how you pull these batteries out of this machine.
I read this as Boimler being a tryhard instead of Boimler wanting to save the lives of the people working under him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's blurry in a lot of this episode because of who he is and who he's been for 3 and some odd seasons up until now.
Yeah, it's elucidated a little bit better later on in the episode, like what exactly is stressing him out.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel like they set it up as a, like, the mystery intention of these scenes is why is Boimler so stressed? Because Boimler is always stressed.
Yeah, exactly. It does not seem unusual here that this is happening.
Hey,
cheaters don't deserve nothing in Latinum.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
That is now your chair, Captain.
Got a new ship.
Up on the ship, the remaining betas have finished with all of these chips, and they're like, yeah, like, we didn't find the one chip that you said was bugging, so I don't know what you want Lieutenant Dirkhead. And he's like, oh, did you check these other ones? And he pushes a button and reveals that there's, in fact, double the number of chips that they were promised, you know, hiding behind all of the ones that they already tested, which sort of breaks continuity because part of the thing was like Lancelot the Ferret kept jumping out from behind panels and like knocking stuff down in there.
Right.
And he didn't see all those other chips behind the panels.
Oh, the second layer is so discouraging.
Yeah. It pretty much confirms what Mariner had suspected, is that this is a jam up and that they're being hazed.
It's also going to be a harder job because these chips are hotter.
Mm.
And you got to use the little tongs to handle them.
Which makes it twice as hard.
If Lancelot the Ferret has been in there, does Lancelot the Ferret have a little rebreather also for when the gas comes in?
Great question. I mean, Lancelot's a city ferret with sturdy pads
mm-hmm.
on his feet to deal with all that heat, huh?
It must be, yeah. So yeah, they, instead of scanning these chips, walk out into the hallway, and Mariner has an idea for getting back at Lieutenant Dirk.
We don't get to hear that idea because we're back on Coruscantia next, where the weather is going bonkers. And Freeman, in a very Freeman kind of way, downplays how bad the situation is, and especially whose fault it might be.
The things that are happening seem super lethal. Like, we're not seeing Coruscantians get squished by rocks, but they're getting close to being squished by rocks, and there's, like, lava coming up out of the ground and stuff. It seems like a lot of Coruscantians probably died this day, right?
It seems like there is a body count to the planet well before Freeman decides to call up Billups and have him beam down to help.
But Billups is just in no mood because he's so sad about Lancelot.
Yeah. Once he's down there, he has advice, but Freeman doesn't really take it.
Yeah. She does not step out of the way and let a more capable engineer finish the job. She, you know, gets under the hood of the computer terminal and, like, tries to put it into safe mode and accidentally reboots Vexilon into regenesis mode. And I guess this is like the startup, like where you select what language you want the operating system to run in and like which Wi-Fi network you'll be using primarily. But it also means it's going to like remake the landscape of Coruscantia to prepare it for its brand new ownership.
Didn't you like the internal logic of this situation? Like reformatting a computer is reformatting a planet in this mm-hmm. case, or
yeah.
or more specifically, like the Ring Society that has been developed there.
Yeah. It seems like at this point, Freeman should be in a staggering amount of trouble with the Federation.
Yeah.
For having put one of the, like an entire world's worth of Federation citizens in this much risk.
Yeah, it's pretty bad at this point.
Yeah.
Over where Boimler is, he has narrowly avoided dying many, many times doing all the work himself. And he's almost done with his task, which is great, except that when Freeman radios him to ask him to reinstall all those power cells the way they were before, Boimler gets back to work himself again.
Solo de-retrofitting the thing that he just retrofitted.
You got a big Murph!
That guy's got huge broad shoulders. Look at him. He's so strong looking.
You think there was an issue with another blue Murph on an animated Star Trek show?
Hmm.
This one's Big Murph.
Yeah.
The other one is the melanoid slime worm Murph, right? Little Murph.
Baby Murph.
Oh, he just keeps going, doesn't he?
Is this what Little Murph turns into?
Oh.
Once he goes through melanoid puberty?
Maybe so. I haven't read up on melanoid life stages.
How gross would Murph be? Little Murph, I mean, if like a big part of his evolution is like body hair,
ugh.
Like body hair on that it's wet
see through.
Yeah, that's not good, right? That's going to be an awkward phase.
Yeah. Yeah. That's bad.
Back on the Cerritos, we're back in the anomaly storage room. And here's where we learn more about Mariner's big plan, right? To get back at Kurtwood Smith.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to set a trap.
This is a classic prank, like the rig up something that you trip over upon walking into the room. Like,
yeah.
you know, people have done this with like putting a bucket of water at the top of a slightly ajar door.
They're home aloning here.
Yeah, absolutely. I did this in college. I set up a can of silly string to spray in the face of people entering my dorm room one time, and all three of my roommates got by this. Fantastic.
Did you ever wonder why your college years went so poorly socially?
We were in the middle of a prank war. This was retaliation.
Oh, okay, it was open prank war, and it wasn't just like a personal war.
No.
Okay.
It wasn't just me being needlessly cruel to my roommates.
You just don't turn it off!
That doesn't sound like you.
They all thought it was great.
I would be very upset to have silly string sprayed in my eyes if I weren't expecting it. And even if I were.
Yeah. But they had senses of humor and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's not me, I guess.
Yeah, so the plan is they're going to trap Lieutenant Dirk in the Wadi game with the Betazoid box, and he'll have to, you know, go through the whole game while this Betazoid box is a real asshole. It's going to be a dick to him the entire time.
Yeah.
It's a great prank. They've set it up. They're walking down the hallway, high-fiving each other, and they run right into Lieutenant Dirk.
Oh, hey, done already?
Totally.
Lieutenant Dirk has a darkness that we have not seen up until now. There's a reason for the isolinear chip season in his mind, and that is that every time he gets near the Wadi Chula game, he is reminded, haunted even, of the time where he was trapped inside one, unable to break free, because the Wadi game is annoying, and the Wadis are smart. Smarter than a kid, it turns out.
I don't know why the scientists keep making them.
And the isolinear chip room is near the anomaly storage room. It's a place he can't work comfortably. This is why he delegated that task to them. It's not a prank.
No, and he's super appreciative. Like, he would have had to be uncomfortably close to that thing, and he's just, like, outpouring how much he respects these three lieutenant junior grades for having taken one on the chin and done a really boring job on his behalf.
Let me ask you something. Are all Wadi Chula games the same? And follow-up question, is Lieutenant Dirk dumb? Because I totally understand being a kid not being able to get out of the Wadi Chula game, but you're a man, Lieutenant Dirk. Like, you should be able to solve it, right?
Well, that's the thing, Adam. What happened to him as a kid is haunting him now. So whether or not, you know, he was too dumb as a kid to figure it out.
You're talking about trauma.
Yeah.
Okay.
His amygdala doesn't know that he's not a kid anymore.
But his miglimo does know all about this.
Yeah. So
Dr. Miglimo does not help, does he?
No.
Dr. Miglimo says acceptance is the road to healing.
I mean, Miglimo can't snap his fingers. It's a path that Dirk has to go down.
It's true, yeah.
Anyways, they realize that they've made a terrible error. They've basically set a situation up where they are going to brutally re-traumatize somebody who was not, in fact, hazing them. And Mariner thinks quick and asks him to tell her about his favorite genre of music, Tellarite slop jazz.
You've rambled about that at length before.
They walk off down the hall and she, like, gets Rutherford and Tendi to do the rest of the job while she distracts him. Go get all those remaining chips scanned and disassemble the prank.
I mean, it's one of the most distracting and time-consuming things you can do to a man is ask them about their weird genre music interests.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mariner really knows what she's doing.
Would you look at that?
Back on the planet, Teal'c kind of boils over and gets totally sick of Boimler's bullshit. She reminds Boimler that this team are Starfleet officers who accepted the risks of their jobs. And this is when Boimler kind of confesses that it's not that he's worried about them dying per se, but that it doesn't feel like he has earned the authority to command them to do things that might lead to those deaths. And she counters with a sort of, you know, two-sided, like, they deserve the trust that you need to extend them, and also they're all going to die if you don't extend them that trust.
How satisfied are you in Boimler's decision here, given that? Like, it doesn't feel like much of a decision at all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The stakes are too high for him to dig his heels in any further.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes that's what it takes for someone to change, you know? Seeing that they've gotten to the absolute limit of their recalcitrance.
It hits a lot harder for a character like Tilin to do something that makes someone else feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and she's very persuasive here. It made me wonder why she has access to personnel files and mission logs at her rank. Like, that seems pretty above her station, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She maybe, like, discovered that she'd been accidentally given access to McLemo's files or something like that.
Yeah.
They thoroughly describe your strengths and shortcomings.
Well, up on the Cerritos, the team is hard at work. Tendi is, like, dual-wielding scanners, just burning through all these spicy hot isolinear chips. Rutherford, a little bit less effective, goes into the room and immediately stumbles into the exact trap they just set.
Oh, man, am I in the game?
Move along home.
But he's so capable as an engineer that, like, he basically does a speed run through the Move Along Home game.
Yeah.
And does it in record time.
Very glad that we got to see a little bit of that game.
Yeah. Like,
definitely Lower Decks has reminded us of the Move Along Home game before, but really great that we actually got to go visit it. And Mariner is stalling by, you know, getting extra sloppy with Lieutenant Dirk.
This isn't boring, is it?
Boring? What? How could a musical lecture be boring?
It looks like they're going to be, like, getting back to his apartment too early for their little leisure demand to work. He's gonna catch them having tried to prank him with that Wadi Chula game.
Except what we didn't factor in was Lieutenant Kurtwood Smith making a mistake of his own, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't need to go back to his quarters.
In fact, his appointment with the good Dr. McLemo is supposed to happen in McLemo's office, where therapy is usually conducted.
I mean,
they're not in the middle of a pandemic. He doesn't have to do it over Zoom.
I question the quality of the therapy taking place. Really.
I love that the box gets interlighted at the end of the prank.
I love that too.
Was that an entire simulated life?
Sorry about that.
That's a really brutal 1-2 prank. To go through the Move Along Home game and then get interlighted just when you think you're out in the clear.
Is the absurdity of that better in your imagination, or would it be fun to go into that world and see Betazoid gift box age and wither and, like, get married and have weird, like, half Betazoid gift box babies with someone on the planet? Like, it seems like there are so many comedic potentials there, mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm, like, I wanted to see a little bit of it, but maybe it's just better inside.
How would the Betazoid gift box wear a big straw hat to protect it from the brightening solar radiation of,
I know,
the inner light planet's star?
Yeah. Who are the Betazoid gift box friends that he makes over a lifetime?
Yeah.
And then watches die.
What instrument does the Betazoid gift box pick up and then gets to keep at the end, because there's one example of it inside the probe?
When Betazoid gift box dies, do you put the Betazoid gift box into a larger box and then put it in the ground? Or can you just bury the box? It seems wasteful.
Mm. Do you think if the Betazoid gift box ever met a lady Betazoid gift box that played a different instrument, he could play along with her? How would they get to the Jeffries tubes for those great acoustics?
Holy shit. I think you just unlocked the thing with me that I couldn't get over, which was, like, I think when you're interlighted, you're taken to a place with compatible physical relationship potential, right? So, like,
right,
Betazoid gift box is transported to a world full of Betazoid gift boxes. Launching Betazoid gift box rocket ships, right?
Right, right.
It's Betazoid gift boxes all the way down.
Yeah. And those Betazoid gift boxes, fuck.
Back on Coruscantia, the team has worked together, finally, and now the power's back on, which is great. Freeman works at the computer station and orders Vexilon. to stand down from the planetary formatting. Vexilon's happy to do this. Vexilon doesn't want to hurt anyone.
No. This regenesis is going to take a second to shut down, though. And as that process begins, Boimler realizes that the power core that they've been trying to retrofit is heating up. And he orders everybody else to get to a safe distance so that he can be the one to shut it down when the regenesis ends. A little heroic turn for Bradward Boimler.
Yeah. And that building blows big.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Michael Bay level explosion to this thing. And Boimler gets blown the fuck off this mortal coil.
Conveniently, his charred body rests at the feet of Taylor the Catman. And he barfs pretty big at the sight of it.
Yeah, but that's just a thing cats do, you know? Like, he might have eaten some grass earlier.
God, what a terrible roommate the Catman would be on the ship. Because you know the Cerritos is carpeted.
Yeah. Oh, man, do not give the top bunk to the Catman.
God. And then your room smells like litter whole time.
Yeah.
Actually, they're probably beaming the cat turds out of the Catman, right?
Do they beam the cat barfs out of the Catman? And what about the hairballs?
Too many questions to answer here.
Yeah.
Then we go into the afterlife, a place we've only really heard about from Shax.
Yeah.
We wake up in the Twin Peaks room with Boimler, and there's that Black Mountain outside where you're supposed to fight the apparitions of your father. And there's that koala.
Hi?
Do we know what the koala says in reverse? Like, I feel like that's going to be a fun Easter egg there.
Oh, is that the thing? Is it's
speaking in reverse, isn't it?
Oh, and it's saying Paul's not dead?
That would be great. That's got to be it, right?
Boimler's not dead, maybe?
It's not your time, Bradward Boimler.
I am excited to listen to this episode where Wendy has dropped that in.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is we'll find out when everybody else does.
Yeah, yeah. But Boimler wakes up. He's alive, thanks to Dr. Katz.
Her name is Dr. Tana.
Yeah, she saved him-ish.
Holy sh! I can't believe that worked.
You know, he gets the slap on the back for saving the day. He's all charred and burnt up.
Mission accomplished, Ben. The big takeaway here is that dying is just a part of being in Starfleet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it could happen to you many, many times over the course of your career.
Well, yeah, now that he's, like, moving up in the ranks, the likelihood of him coming back from death only increases, right?
It's true.
So he was the only fatality of the mission. Good for him. We end with a little scene of the other three drinking at the end of their day, having accomplished their mission, finding the one bum isolinear chip and preventing Lieutenant Dirk from being re-traumatized. And then we, like, you know, camera pulls back and it turns out Lieutenant Dirk is sitting there with Ransom. And they toast the blue drink of needless cruelty to the fact that they were, in fact, hazing the entire time.
How about that?
What a reveal.
Very surprising. Did you like this episode, Ben?
She'll always bring it home.
I like this episode. I will confess, I watched it at 5 a.m.
Oh, you're jet-lagged, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm jet-lagged and sick, so...
Damn. You're sick-lagged.
You know, I think ever since COVID, the level of, like, niceness about being sick in the house has gone way down, and it's now, like, go out and sit in your fucking office and think about what you did.
Wow. So we're not even testing at home. You're just sleeping out in the outbuilding.
I tested.
Yeah?
I tested neg.
Not good enough.
Not good enough.
You sleep outside.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you had a great vacation with the wife and kid, huh?
It was totally great. It was awesome.
Oh, Ben.
So fucking relaxing.
I really feel for you, dude. I make fun because it is my love language, but jeez.
I was glad to have this episode to cheer me up, but I wasn't in, like, the greatest of moods while I watched it.
Wow. Well, I hope the doing of the episode helped.
Yeah, me too. What did you think of this one?
Ben, I was upset by the main takeaway of this thing, which is the risk defangment of being a person in Starfleet. like that you could ascend in rank to the point of immortality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a dangerous idea if you're creating Star Trek shows. And I wish that was not so much of a storyline here. Like, I think that breaks a lot of stories and the risks inherent in a lot of them. Like, I don't want to have this running in the background where the dangers aren't really dangers because Dr. Katz can just wake you back up in the end. Like, it's fun and funny when it's rare. It hit especially hard when it was Shax. But if you were to go back and watch the Death of Shax episode, knowing how easy, free, and convenient it is to get the medical care that you require after dying, like, I don't think that hits as hard as it did. And I don't like retroactively feeling that way about death in Star Trek. Like, I think the stakes should still mean something.
Yeah.
And I still think it's hilarious to fight three faceless fathers on a black mountain and, like, all of it. Like, the legend of death in Star Trek is great. But, boy, I hope they pull back a little more on reviving dead folks in this show. So it means something when people go. Or when danger is apparent. That's my main takeaway here. I mean, fine episode.
So what you're calling for is for them to kill off one of our favorite characters on Lower Decks. Just to, like, show us that it can be done.
As usual, I've used way too many words to say a thing that you're able to say succinctly. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, who's it going to be? Somehow I'm hoping it's just Rock Talk.
Jesus.
You know what? If Rock Talk was around during the Moopsie episode, you could just drop her teeth all around. That would have helped.
Oh, yeah. That would have been great for everyone.
Moopsie.
Well, do you want to see if there's anything in the Prairie One inbox for us to kill off, Adam?
Well, Ben, I certainly don't have that spreadsheet open. I'm going to go ahead and get over there and make it so.
It's too early in the morning to have a spreadsheet open before we start recording. Come on.
I know.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
All right, Ben, we've got two Priority One messages here. The first one is from your brother, Steven. Did you know you had a brother, Steven?
It's my brother, Steven?
It is to Sam Pye. That message goes like this. To my brother, Sam, wishing you the happiest of birthdays. Thank you for being the Cybok to my Spock.
Whoa.
The Worf to my Kern.
Wow.
And the Lore to my Data. That is a combination. So check this out. Your brother, Steven, is a combination of Spock, Kern, and Data?
The mind reels.
Have a great day and live long and prosper, Steven. P.S. Thanks for being the best man at my wedding this August.
Wow. Congratulations, Steven, on getting married, and happy birthday to Sam. The brother's pie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pie day all the time in that household.
No kidding.
But what Steven has told us is that Sam is a combination of Cybok, Worf, and Lore.
It's a hell of a combination.
Yeah. Just impossible to do the four-dimensional chess of understanding.
Sam sounds like a very chaotic best man.
Yeah. Well, Adam, our next Priority One message is from Master Blaster, and it's to FODs Everywhere. It goes like this. We thought chemo and radiation 8 years ago benched all my swimmers, but what my theory presupposes is the dick and fart jokes of TGG got me blasting fully loaded ropes again.
Something about it reminds me of being in the womb.
Get up, Harry.
Who are you?
Harry Kim. Parents must be very proud.
Who are you?
They come as a pair.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Who else is she supposed to get chummy with?
Harry Kim.
And your mom?
Very proud.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
I lasted 22 minutes.
And your mom? Very proud. Harry Kim.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Wow.
Now we just need Dr. Bashir to confirm the result.
Must have been some mix-up.
Wow. So Master Blaster sounds like maybe participated in conception? This person just wrote a Priority One in to brag about doing it?
You know, one of the most hilarious things to happen out in London was, like, after the show, after the London show, we did an impromptu meet and greet outside. And one of the FODs there rolled up with a yellowish beverage and was like, "Look, I'm drinking a Rope Master." Rope Masters of Cross the Pond.
Amazing.
It sounds like Master Blaster has crossed the threshold.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that is great, Master Blaster. Good luck to your baby mama and you. It sounds like you're heading into a great adventure of not getting a lot of sleep.
Yeah, how many episodes of Greatest Gen or Greatest Trek has Master Blaster listened to? Especially the recent ones.
Ben is a lot less coherent and funny lately. I wonder what that's about.
As always, Priority One Messages supports the production of our show. You can write one for us to read at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Indeed.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin!
I did. There was one little vignette when the planet starts to come apart that shows a group of people in a, like a, not a human figure painting class, because the very term is racist. A Coruscantian figure painting class, I guess you would call it. And there's a naked guy with a scarf conveniently covering his junk, doing the pose for all of these people with their, you know, their charcoal and their easels. I just love the idea of being nude when the sky literally starts to fall and you have to, like, jump out of the way for a solidified cloud that crushes the platform you were standing on.
There's a version of Kirk's line in Star Trek V that goes like, I always knew I would die naked. How did you know your life wasn't in danger when you fell off El Capitan? Easy. I wasn't naked.
My junk wasn't flapping in the wind as I fell.
I always knew I'd die naked, so I knew I'd be fine.
So that guy's my Edward Larkin. How about you, Adam?
I think Freeman's confidence to just do it herself is a very Edward Larkin sense to have. I mean, you should ask for help if you don't know how to do something.
Yeah.
Or risk destroying the entire ring world. And to me, I think that's Edward Larkin worthy. So,
no kidding.
You're it, Captain Freeman.
Wow. That was a ton of fun, Adam. Why don't you head over to our internal Slack and see if you can dig up a warning bois that Bill has shared in the warning bois section. This is a segment on the show where we shout out someone who shouted us out by posting online or posting a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Just helping us grow the show, helping us get the word out about what we're doing over here.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
Ben, I've got a 5-star review from Apple Podcasts here. Headline, warning bois, laughs ahead. Review goes like this. Be advised, this podcast may result in double takes, spit takes, and hot takes.
Wow.
Ben Adam and Editor Windy are the best team to give you the rundown of all the new Trek. It's not just a synopsis and a review, no. These guys were filmmakers before becoming full-time embarrassments to their families by podcasting Trek. So you get a lot of inside baseball. Best part? They love their viewers, and you feel that in the content.
Oh.
Yeah. You do, don't you?
You feel it big. I hope.
Yeah.
I hope you feel it.
I love it. I love the FODs. I love making pod with you, Ben. It's the only reason we wake up early, the day after returning home from a trip to Europe.
Yeah.
Only reason to do anything anymore.
I'm going to take a little bit more of my DayQuil and bask in the afterglow of that very nice message and this very fun episode, Adam.
Yeah. You know what the afterglow of every episode of Greatest Trek is? It's Windy taking us home.
Yeah. Windy, take it away.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Windy Pretty. Next Friday, Ben and Adam will be back with a recap of Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 4, Something Borrowed, Something Green. At the end of every episode of this show, we like to say thank you to the people who make it possible. First and foremost, the Max Fund members who support the show on a monthly basis. When you become a member, you get instant access to the entire back catalog of bonus content, as well as new bonus episodes every month. You can become a member at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate it. We also want to thank Adam Ragusea. He composed all of the original music for this show. Check out his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thanks to Nick Ditmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Bill Tilly for managing all of the @GreatestTrek social media pages on Instagram, Threads, Twitter, and Mastodon. Follow those accounts and use the #GreatestTrek to connect with other friends of DeSoto online. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.